Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd. I'm better. Live from Los Angeles, this is the Herd. There's lots to get to here. Lots to get to. I did not hear, but I did see Colin on Instagram posted his thoughts on Dwayne Haskins, right? Was he pro or anti Dwayne Haskins? I mean, you know, I'll get to Dwayne Haskins and a tweet I had. How many months ago was February? That I don't hate to say I told you so. I did, in fact, tell you so. And I'll take my victory lap upcoming. Didi Gregorius, Philly shortstop, is going to join us. We'll ask him about the Yankees and Alex Rodriguez's criticism of the Yankees brass making decisions that he believes. Again, this is Fox Major League Baseball analyst Alex Rodriguez last night on TV saying that the upper management is making decisions trying to outsmart the Ivy Leaguers, and that's what's led to the Yankees falling behind 2-1 in their best of 5 series with the Tampa Bay Rays. We'll get to Didi Gregorius in 30 minutes. Ryan Russillo is going to join us in an hour and 15. What is this championship, which we assume LeBron James is going to win? I think he's going to win it tomorrow night. Mean for LeBron's legacy. And Charles Robinson is going to join us, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports. What do we do to shame the Tennessee Titans for an unauthorized practice? Talking about practice, man. Not a game. We talking about practice. Oh, and why I was right about Dwayne Haskins. Really, really right about Dwayne Haskins. Let me get to this. So tonight we have Thursday Night Football, and it's the first, like, real Thursday Night Football game, right? The first couple, they're like, how do we get Jacksonville and the Bengals and some of these other crummy teams on their Thursday Night game? Like, let's have them all play each other. Okay. Like, we had Miami, Jacksonville, and Cincinnati, Cleveland. Like, proximity rivals. But now we got big boy football. And while I don't think anyone believes the Bears are legit Super Bowl contenders, Khalil Mack, if you look, is back to playing like one of the top 5 defensive players in football. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers come fresh off a come from behind. They trail by double digits win at home over the LA Chargers. Now Brady's team is 3-1. And you look at the Bears, they're coming off of what I think anyone would consider a really, really, really disappointing performance. Not because they lost, but because of the fact that the Bears got outplayed. Like, I talked to somebody in the Bears organization a couple days ago, and he's like, man, we just laid an egg. That just should not happen. Should not be able to sit there and go, wait, how does a team come and just kick our tail the way the Indianapolis Colts did? But that's what happened. So I think you got a motivated Bears team who's, you know, like, probably a playoff team, right? Like, the Bears are one of those teams, like, who else made the playoffs? Oh, the Bears. Yeah, they made the playoffs. Are they going to win? And look, it's technically a rematch of Foles versus Brady. Over under on how many times Philly Special's mentioned tonight. Over under. Five. The adage in broadcasting is, if you don't tell a story twice, you didn't tell it. So my guess would be that we're going to see the replay of Philly Special at least twice tonight. How many times will it be mentioned? If it was 5, I'd take the under. 2, I'd take the over. It will be mentioned. But there's this thing in sports, and I find it fascinating that we're going to have back-to-back nights of kind of something similar, right? Which is older superstar athlete, clearly not what they used to be athletically, but super, maybe highest level of high sports IQ. And do they have enough around them to carry them so that their talents, though not what they used to be, can still come through in the end? Like, look, I think LeBron James is going to be amazing tomorrow night. Amazing. He's got an extra day off, and he, like everybody else in the bubble, just wants to go home. And if you look at the Lakers, their closeout games, that's when he has played his best basketball. He hasn't played great. He hasn't played poorly. He's been okay for LeBron. Like, Anthony Davis has been a bigger determinant in them winning and losing in terms of his production at both ends than LeBron. But in Game 5, he's going to be amazing. But LeBron can't do it every night, and he needs dudes around him. He needed to go out and get Anthony Davis, a top 5 player in the NBA, in order for all of his basketball wisdom and, frankly, his basketball skill to come out. I need you to carry me through the first three quarters, and then I can end up icing and finishing the game. Granted, it was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who we all knew would come through in the end, right? All of us at the start of the season were like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will come through in the end. That's a joke. Anyway, the same will happen tonight. Because there's this continuum in sports, right? You have this athletic ability, and then you have sports IQ. And when it's right in the middle, that's when you have, like, otherworldly talent. That was Tom Brady with Randy Moss. And maybe the story of Tom Brady, which is the most fascinating, which I feel like, and yes, I know, America, Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin, I am a bit of a contrarian. But this is not a counter thought. This is a thought that I think sometimes we don't explore enough. Tom Brady's peak, he threw 50 touchdown passes. They went undefeated up until the Super Bowl. They lost basically on one or two crazy plays in the Super Bowl. We didn't get a chance to truly experience Tom Brady's peak because after throwing 50 touchdowns, he got hurt the next year. That's when they were the best team in the league. That's when they had elite level talent. And soon after, the Moss thing started to kind of sour. And he was still, remember, he went a decade without winning a Super Bowl. And it wasn't because that wasn't his best football. It was just because of other circumstances and coming off the knee. It takes like a year of coming back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we're going to see Brady tonight, and what is remarkable about Brady and remarkable about LeBron is they're at the peak of the other side of the continuum, right? Like absolute football brilliance. I'm not sure people understand exactly how hard it is for Tom Brady to do what he's doing. Have you guys ever tried to learn a different language in your 40s? Right? Like, lots of our kids are learning foreign languages or whatever they do in schools now, right? On Zoom or whatever. And there's a portion of your brain that apparently closes up, doesn't completely close up, but shrinks every year after you're like 5 or 6 years old in terms of your ability to learn foreign languages. I tried to learn Russian when I was in my 20s, and I was okay at it. If I tried in my 40s now, it would be a disaster. I've spoken English my entire life, and English has nuances that make no sense in any other language. But in English, it does. In a Slavic language, or almost like Russian, the train of thought is completely different, right? The sentence pattern is very, very different. That's Tom Brady. Tom Brady was essentially in the exact same system. And you can tell me, hey, man, they went from, you know, he wasn't a major part of the offense early. Then it was screen pass, screen pass, screen pass. Then they got Randy Moss, and he threw the ball deep downfield a ton. And then they became, you know, option route, crossing route, everything on third down underneath with Welker, and then to Danny Amendola, et cetera, et cetera. Right? You can tell me that the Patriots' offense changed and metamorphosized itself, not just year to year, but sometimes week to week. Yes, Amendola, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, kind of same guy, different, but same guy, same routes, whatever. The thing is, all of the terms, all of the verbiage, all of the reads, all of the automatics, you get to the line of scrimmage, you're like, ooh, 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 I've seen this before. I know what the answer is. Now you go to Tampa, they got a completely different way of doing things. Outside of Gronk, who he barely uses, all those other guys are new. And though they got together and illegally threw the football at a park in Tampa, they didn't have a true offseason program. You got a coach who has been a no-risk-it, no-biscuit, throw-it-down-the-field sort of guy. You got all these guys that are learning Tom Brady's way. They've never experienced winning, and Tom Brady has never experienced a new football language, a new verbiage. And so you get it to the line of scrimmage, and you're like, we call this Bama. Yeah, we call this California. What do you call it now? And yet, here we are 4 weeks into the season. Granted, they've played three mediocre teams. They're 3-1, and it appears like it's starting to hit its stride. But the true brilliance to LeBron, the true brilliance to Tom Brady that you're going to see the next two nights is the understanding of, I can't do this crap by myself anymore. I need a couple of guys in football and a guy in basketball to make some plays so that my sports IQ and every once in a while I can dial up that old level of talent and be that superstar self that I have. There's lots of things that make you a sports genius. Okay, but the reason Bill O'Brien got fired is the same reason that Kyrie Irving sounded like a jerk last week, is that the smartest people know enough to know what they don't know, right? And the smartest athletes know enough to know what they can't do anymore and get somebody else who can do it for them. I think there'll be times in which Tom Brady will look 43. I think that if they can force him off his spot, as has always been the case, and make him feel rushed, he'll be a little bit lost because the offense is very, very different. I'm not sure how good Tampa really is. But, you know, you got guys in Tampa Bay saying, of course I believe in him. He's Tom Brady. He made a couple plays in the second quarter that made them believe, and then they just took off after that with the Chargers last week. Over the next two nights, I think you'll understand the true greatness of great athletes. I think Aaron Rodgers is probably the best quarterback I've ever seen play, but Tom Brady's the most successful for a reason. I'm a Jordan guy, not a LeBron guy. We can get into how we value this championship versus other championships. But the understanding of where you are athletically, the willingness to allow others to make plays that you used to be able to make, that's when you show your true kind of sports acumen, true brilliance to me. All right, coming up next, I'm going to be critical of a star quarterback in the NFL that for whatever reason, everyone else seems to be ducking and dodging any critique of him. I won't. That's next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Seeing the check engine light turn on gives anyone anxiety, but with the coverage from CarShield, you won't dread unexpected repairs. Get coverage today and see why CarShield cars go further. Visit CarShield.com, use the code HERD, and save 10%. A deductible may apply. It's very, very important that we start with this as the premise. I love Deshaun Watson, right? I think he's tough. I think he's talented. I think he's done a lot of tremendous things during his time as starting quarterback of the Houston Texans. So in no way am I saying, dude, you got to bench him or you got to move on from him. Of course, they can't because they just signed him to the second biggest contract in the history of the sport. Right? But I do think that this is an absolutely fair way to look at it. Right? Bill O'Brien got fired by the Houston Texans on Monday. And what's come out since is his confrontational style, which we shouldn't be surprised by, right? Like, until he was fired, or maybe until he was the head coach of the Texans, what he was most known for was a verbal confrontation with Tom Brady when they worked together in New England. Like, oh, that's how they roll in New England. Like, that's who B.O.B. was. And I'm perfectly okay with people saying that Bill O'Brien, his arrogance, his complete, he was a, you know, taking over complete control, you know, trained DeAndre Hopkins, getting into it with J.J. Watt. He lost the locker room, and that's why he ultimately lost his job. That's fair. Okay? Hey, help me out here. Aaron Rodgers ever start 0-4? No. Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, ever 0-4. Give me the star quarterback that has ever begun a season, outside of maybe their first season in the NFL, right? Like the Troy Aikman when they're terrible his first season. Like in the prime of their career, they've ever started 0-4. Now, look, again, I will grant you that they played Kansas City, defending champions, on the road. And while they had a couple extra days to prepare, they played Baltimore at home. And then they took on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, two very good teams. I would also point out that it's the same Baltimore defense that Pat Mahomes ripped to shreds. Right? Like, these are all fair things. Hasn't found a great running game. Not all his fault. But can somebody tell me why there hasn't been any critique of Deshaun Watson's play? Look, I follow all these guys who I love. Jeff Schwartz now works for us. He does the breakdown with a spoon. That's pretty cool, right? Like, I'm stirring coffee, and now I'm pointing out at Dan Orlovsky, former quarterback. Like, I haven't seen one piece of tape showing me, like, what's not working with the Houston Texans. Now, look, again, I'm not saying he should get all of the blame, half of the blame. But, like, Dak Prescott is setting records in Dallas. And there are many people, myself included, like, hey, that's great. But down three scores, lots of people put up numbers. What'd you do in the first half? Your defense may be a disaster, but you got to keep your team in it when your defense is just a sieve. Like, we can say what we want about the Atlanta Falcons, right? And their inability to have a lead. But they had these big leads because there are times in which Matt Ryan is actually balling. Right? They had a huge lead over the Cowboys because Matt Ryan was putting them in position to have those big leads. Same thing the very next week against, what was it, the Bears? Cowboys don't have that, so at least that's not what's happening with the Texans. They're bad. Their offense is fairly feeble. He's one game thrown over 300. He's not the same runner he used to be, nor should he be, because that's one of the things that led to him getting hurt in college and in the pros and playing with a collapsed lung a couple years ago. Like, dude's a warrior, okay? Got kicked in the face with a cleat and then threw a touchdown pass with one eye last year. I'm not trying to tell you he stinks and I don't like him. I'm just saying, don't tell me that Deshaun Watson's is playing well and not part of the problem when his team's 0-4 and they lost to the Minnesota Vikings. Some of the blame should go on Teflon Deshaun, and it's not. It's really weird. He hadn't won a Super Bowl. Hadn't gotten to an AFC Championship game. Hasn't won MVP. We love him because he won a national championship at Clemson, and because he put up sick numbers, the rookie got hurt, and he's been really, really good, and he's really, really tough. And he's fun, and he's likable. All these things are, but is he really an elite quarterback? No, he's the second highest paid guy in the league. His team starts 0-4, and everything is Bill O'Brien, Bill O'Brien. Hey, the one thing we think Bill O'Brien can do is offensive football, pretty good at it. And their offense, all DeAndre Hopkins? I don't think so. Why does he escape all criticism? Somebody explain that one to me. You know, we're critical of Lamar when he has one bad game against the Chiefs. He's in his third year as a starter. No one says a word when they're 0-4 in Houston. Let's get to John Goulet with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
So, Doug, we had some kind of bad news coming out of Tennessee this morning. Another Titans player tested positive for COVID.
Another one.
They also found that, remember, yesterday two people tested positive. One was inconclusive. That inconclusive is now back to being a confirmed positive.
Very confusing. Just all bad news coming
out of it. Titans facility obviously will remain closed, which also did not stop the Titans from practicing last week. News came out yesterday that some of the players gathered at a local school on Wednesday of last week in order to practice. Their head coach, Mike Vrabel, said that players were told not to do that. Here's where it gets interesting. The Titans are scheduled to play the Bills on Sunday. You think, okay,
undefeated Bills, by the way.
They might have to push the game back. Well, they can't. The Bills are supposed to play the Chiefs next Thursday, which is awesome. Let's not ruin that game. Diana Rossini of ESPN is reporting that there's been some discussion of pushing the Bills-Titans game to Monday or Tuesday and then pushing the Thursday game, Bills-Chiefs, back to potentially Saturday. These are all just reports. How should the NFL handle this?
I think you delay as much as you can. You don't have any more bye weeks. And I think, you know, anyone who's tested positive, I think you have to eliminate them from your roster. And if they have to throw backups out there, that's got to be their punishment for practicing. Look, I understand that the punishment they may receive would be extra harsh, not because they had an unauthorized practice, but because they were told not to have an unauthorized practice, right? Like, that's the real... Do you guys remember Bounty Gate? Like, the Saints will have you believe that they never had really real bounties, and the NFL came down and put these harsh punishments on them, and it was unfair. Like, that's not what happened. They found out they were having bounties. They told them, and they came and met with them and said, under no uncertain circumstances do you have bounties. And then there's tape of Greg Williams the night before they're going to play the Packers in the NFC Championship game saying that they have bounties. And then players coming off the field saying, pay me my money. So it wasn't just that they had bounties, that's player safety, but they also were told specifically not to have bounties. So I do think that they're going to get a punishment. But you have to have the context of it was September 29th. The thing had just gone down the day before. Lots of guys in Tennessee are in denial of all of this stuff to begin with. And at the time, everybody thought their game last week would just be moved to Monday or to Tuesday. Like, hey, we're still going to play Pittsburgh. They get to still practice, and we're not going to practice, and we're undefeated. Like, no. We got to have to get this thing in. So I give them a little bit more of a pass. I don't think it's some egregious sin. But if I'm the NFL, yeah, I delay as much as I can, try and get the game in this week or Monday or Tuesday, and then push that Chiefs game back. The Chiefs have, I think, 3 and 11 days. They shouldn't be punished because of what happened in Tennessee.
Fair. And finally, the Dodgers won a wild game two last night in Texas over the Padres, 6-5. They take a 2-0 series lead. The highlight of the game,
Cody Bellinger,
Dodger center fielder Cody Bellinger.
No balls, no strikes.
And Tatis... the fly ball to center field and deep. Bellinger going back to the wall. He leaps and makes a spectacular catch. Cody Bellinger robs Tatis of a two-run home run. His glove was 6 or 7 inches over the yellow line and straight away center. A spectacular catch.
Things got a little heated after that.
It did.
Between Manny Machado, who had a over-the-top bat flip earlier in the game. Let's say they told Machado to leave. Is that a fair way of politely putting what they told him?
Yes.
Padres had a chance to win in the ninth, though. Had the bases loaded after Dodgers closer, Kenley Jansen loaded the bases. Joe Kelly came in and got out of it. I think you're going to probably see some more fireworks in tonight in game three, don't you think?
Yes. First of all, this series is awesome. Padres are real, and they're spectacular, and they clearly don't like the Dodgers. The feeling is mutual. It's amazing. I just wish it was played for the fans in the home stadiums. Like, they're playing at Dodger Stadium. They're playing at Petco. The Dodgers and the Padres aren't playing at Dodger Stadium at Petco. Strike anybody else as bizarre? Right? Like, they can play at both stadiums, just not with the actual teams that play at those stadiums. That doesn't make any sense to me. Sorry. The big thing is this. I watched the Dodgers, and I don't believe that they can win 9 more games with their closing situation. Like, Joe Kelly, yes, he technically got Hosmer to ground out, but that was after 2 huge walks, which he threw a couple 55-foot curveballs, right? Like, he is tight. And then Kenley just doesn't have it anymore. I don't know how you can win a World Series if you don't have a closer, and you're still 9 games away. The next 2 series are 7-game series, right? 9 games away. But I will be watching, and it was an amazing, amazing baseball game, which you can hear right here on AM 570 in Los Angeles. And that's John Goulet with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Oh, Didi Gregorius spending some time with us here, Phillies shortstop. Didi, are you team bat flip or are you team Dodgers?
honestly, I haven't watched it, but I mean, both teams are good. That's why they're there. So, may the best team win.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Padres. I mean, Tatis is nasty. That ball, and for Bellinger, who he is kind of Swiss Army knife, right? Where you can play him all over. But a guy who's a first baseman to make that play, that's like a dream scenario for any play, to play a ball perfectly in center field and not your home park and rob a home run.
Oh yeah, I saw the highlight yesterday. That's crazy. That was crazy.
Didi Gregorius joining us here in the Herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. Let me first start with Kershaw. Look, I know obviously playing most of your career American League, you didn't see Kersh, but it does feel like it's kind of an amazing evolution to where you lose, you know, 4 or 5 miles an hour off your fastball and still able to be a dominant pitcher. Why is he so hard to hit now that his fastball is low 90s into high 80s?
I think command is the big thing. I mean, you can throw 100 if you can't command it, but then you throw 95 or 88 or 89 if you can hit your spot. I think that's unhittable. I think that's like almost every pitcher in the game. Once they hit their spot, it's lights out for the hitters.
I want to ask you about the Yankees. Alex Rodriguez, pretty critical of the Yankees front office. He said, "Look, game one they went old school, starting pitcher, 9 outs from the bullpen. Game two, kind of said they tried to get cute, play more analytics." You've experienced it. What is that like in the dugout where it feels like the manager kind of has to get clearance from the analytics crew in terms of what decisions are made?
So this is the thing. Like, we as players, we don't have much say into that because all we can do is put on the uniform and play the game the best we can and go out there and enjoy and have fun and play the game the right way. But in those situations, you know, that's not in the player's department to say something like you should not be doing the analytics way. I think there should be a middleman. You get a person to talk to the manager or people in the front office and say that people still make adjustments, and you got to go about it as the game goes on. You know, like the analytics part for me, from my understanding, is what the player has done in the past.
Yeah.
And what about the present? Like, if you made an adjustment during the at-bat, because you never know, the pitcher might not hit a spot, and he hits the ball the other way, for example, like against the shift. So, and the pitcher's going to get mad, probably, because he thinks it's a routine out, but then they have to shift on. So it's like 50-50, because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And for me, like, analytics part of the game, like, I understand why they're doing it. But they also have to make adjustments on the when players make adjustments and who's pitching and all that stuff. So if you have a guy, that, for example, Chapman that throws hard, and then you have the left-handed hitter that's a dead pull hitter, I don't think he's going to pull Chapman all the time.
Yeah.
For example. So it's just things of adjustment that should be allowed to make. But that's not in my say because there's not much I can do because I'm not an analytics guy.
Yeah.
I'm the player, and I can read the swing sometimes. So I think that's why I play that position.
Yeah, no question. It's really, really interesting. It does take the human element. Like, guys do make adjustments, and so the numbers like, you make adjustments to your swing, you make adjustments to your approach. On a certain day, you can be feeling it. On a certain, you know, and it takes the actual human emotion out of it, which on some levels is good. On the other level, like, that's not really how sports work. There are just days in which you're seeing a baseball better. There's days in which your timing mechanism is better, right?
That's 100% true because nobody feels the same. We're also human beings, so I might have a stomach ache, for example. Am I not feeling good today? And then for some reason, I can't hit the ball the way I normally hit it, but I go the other way or I get a blooper to drop while they're playing me super deep, for example. So it's just the things that changes. Like, nobody's going to be the same every day. The same thing if you look, like, when the hitter is hot, doesn't matter what he hits drops. But when he's cold, he might hit the same thing, but everything's getting caught.
Didi, what is it like to watch the Yankees in the playoffs, a club that's all the only club you would play with up until this year, to watch them play and you're not part of it? What's that feeling like for you emotionally?
I have not been watching the playoffs at all, to be honest. I've watched some highlights, but that's it. You know, like ain't much I can do. You know, they moved on, so I had to move on too. So, I mean, they're playing. I'm at home doing the stuff that I need to do, like cleaning the house.
You won't even watch?
I'm prepared for next year.
You won't even watch?
No, I'm not. I have not been watching the games at all. I just watched some highlights, and that's it.
Do you want the Astros to win, or want the Astros like that? Do you want them to lose? Like are you in privately in your heart of hearts? What do you feel about the Astros and them and their success in the playoffs?
I mean, there ain't much I can do or say, but for me, what they did, I mean, everybody knew it was wrong. And this year, like, I mean, it is what it is. They're playing against the same teams, I guess, right now, and they're playing good. I mean, there's not else that I can say that, like, because I know they cost a lot of players jobs. Like, there's guys that was on board of making it, and then they lost their job because they played the Astros and what they did. And I feel bad for those guys because of they could have probably prolonged their career, but now their career got ended, or probably had to start to stay in the big leagues and then didn't get the chance after that. So I feel bad for those guys that didn't make it after that. So I think that's the one thing that I want to say for sure that was wrong. And I mean, it ain't much that I can say or do right now that's going to change anything, because it is what it is now.
Yeah.
And they're playing, as of right now, they're playing clean. So, I mean, they're competing against all the other teams.
1 in 5 kids won't have a chance to play Little League for financial reasons next season. So MLB's postseason, T-Mobile's donating $5,000 per home run to T-Mobile Little League Call-Up Grant Program, which helps cover registration fee for kids in need. Why your involvement with the Little League and with this fund?
No, because it's always good to give back, because, you know, their fans, kids, they always watch their favorite team play, you know, so it's always good to give back. So they also, when they have a chance, they can be in this situation and their position, and they can always give back, you know, so it's always good to donate and, you know, get kids on the field, you know, because it's something you want to see, because there's not a lot of kids that have the opportunity to play the game because of the expenses and all that stuff. But if you donate and help these kids out, you know, it's all over the world and here in the States too. Like, it's just handing out and helping, you know. It's the same thing when I was growing up, playing Little League. Your dream is to make it to the big league. Once you make it to the big leagues, now what? You know, you got to stay, and then you always got to give back, because you want to see the next person too make it and have their dream come true. So I think that's one of the reasons why I joined them, because it's something really cool and awesome that they've been doing.
I got two more for you. You are always going to be that name, the guy who replaced Derek Jeter as shortstop for the New York Yankees. What do you remember about you know, that first time you run out there, opening day 2015, and you replace Derek Jeter?
I got booed.
what is that like? Like, right? Like, you've been with the Diamondbacks, you come over, you like the Reds, you know, Reds first picked you up, and like you come over and you have all this hope and you're in Yankee Stadium and they're booing you and you ain't played a day before as starting shortstop.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, they booed me and didn't even give me a chance yet, you know, but I mean, it is what it is. Hey, I heard it every time, every game when we played at home. So, I mean, it was a good learning process for me, because I'm there to play the game. And then, of course, the first one wasn't the way I wanted. I was terrible. Started really bad. And the boo got getting louder and louder and louder. And then I told the reporters, because they keep asking every day, there was questions about if I can hear the fans and all that stuff. It's like, of course I can hear them. I'm on the field. And every time I get there, they boo me. So it doesn't matter. Like, I hear it. And then I told them, like, it's not how you start a season. You know, it's how you end and how strong you can be. Like, and then after that couple months, I started progressing and I got better. And settled down, got better. And then those boos turns into some cheering.
Yeah.
Because I took it as they boo you because they want you to do good. That's basically how I took it. So I learned from that, and then I kept that in my head every time I played a game. So when somebody boo you, don't take it personal. It's just because they want you to do better than what you or them expected. So that's how I took it.
All right, last thing. I got an 11-year-old son, stud player. Got dinged with a ball in the eye about a year and a half ago, and he gets a little jumpy when he gets to the plate. How do you overcome that?
I think it's all trust, because I got smoked in the head once by a lefty in 2013, because he threw me like a bunch of curveballs and then threw me a freaking heater straight at the head, and I was like when I got hit, and I was like, a little bit dizzy, start spitting, you know, just all that stuff, but then passed the concussion test and all that stuff. And it was just trusting myself back and getting comfortable day by day, you know. I think it was more that, because you still see the ball coming every now and then. And it's not easy to get out of the way all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things while you're hitting. Did the guy hit when he was hitting or?
Yeah, hitting.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the things. Like, or you can, or nowadays they have that face flap that everybody's been using, and that can also help him and give him the trust back to make sure he has something to cover his face, so if the ball comes at him, he can get out of the way, or if he tries to get out of the way and the ball still hit the flap instead of his face. So yeah. I think that's one of the things that actually helps now, too.
Yeah, no, he's got one of those flaps. Didi, great stuff. Thanks so much for your time. Have fun cleaning the house every once in a while. You might want to throw on the Yankees. love to get your thoughts. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
Didi Gregorius of the Philadelphia Phillies. Some people feel as though Dwayne Haskins hasn't gotten a fair shake. I'll tell you why they're wrong next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Men, boost healthy testosterone and burn fat. Try M-Drive Boost and Burn. Feel more energized and lean. M-Drive Boost and Burn. Check it out at mdriveformen.com. mdriveformen.com. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. I thought Colin made a good point on his Instagram page early today when he said, look, if you watch a guy play, you watch Joe Burrow play a couple of games, you know he has it. 11 games is how many games Dwayne Haskins has started. We can know he doesn't have it. Look, there were warning signs there. I know he threw 50 touchdown passes and he's got a great arm. But Urban Meyer said he wasn't ready. He was right. It wasn't just the self. Have you ever seen a quarterback miss a snap in the NFL because they were taking a selfie with a fan? No. I tweeted out on February 27th that somebody close to the former staff, and I know Jay Gruden's staff didn't want to draft and didn't like him, but they were so befuddled by his inability to learn the playbook and communicate the play to his teammates that they actually went and looked through his, is he dyslexic? Because he's not dumb, he's bright, but this is a really hard job and one that requires complete and total dedication. Doug Williams, former quarterback of the Washington Redskins, who works in the organization, said he had conversation with Dwayne Haskins about, can't just gallivant around here, you got to lock in and do the work. You get a new boss in February in Ron Rivera. And we can sit here and go, well, he didn't have this and he didn't have that. He didn't. But you get a new boss and you got 7 months to make that guy believe you have complete and total knowledge of the playbook and ability to make plays, and you don't do it. I'm sorry. He's just not good enough. And either he's not smart enough to understand the playbook, or he's not working hard enough. But the stories are the same out of D.C. with the Washington football team. Two different front offices, two different coaching staffs, the same feelings. Doesn't have great feet, locks in on his first wide receiver, doesn't have complete command of the offense. Listen to what you're hearing. Like Scott Turner, that's North Turner's son, their offensive coordinator, he has said, we want somebody who knows the system better. And look, Kyle Allen, it's not like Kyle Allen's some savant. He just locked in. He started last year from Carolina. There's some trust there. They don't know what they have. They're rebuilding in Washington. Everybody knows that. But they can't see what everybody has. There's a limit to what they can do because the guy under center just doesn't know what he's doing. He got Rosened. That's the way sports work. You get an opportunity, you better be ready. And if you're not ready and you haven't done your homework, you get exposed and people move on. And when they didn't draft you, there's no connection to you, there's no tie to you. They don't feel obligated to play you just because they didn't take you in the first round. So, no, I don't have sympathy. If he hangs around the league, he'll get another opportunity as a backup and then maybe earn his way to being a starter, and he's got to be ready then. Got to be ready then. Coming up next, I mean, like, look, there's a reason they were in the quarterback market during the draft, right? That was not a smokescreen. They weren't impressed. Dak Prescott has found himself in a win-win situation despite his team losing. That's next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.